Hello, everybody. I'm Lou Dobbs. Thanks for being with us for this episode of The Great America Show. In the midst of those midterm elections, there were all sorts of cross currents and whispered subtext to all the drama that was unfolding before our eyes. You know, lying, cheating, and stealing? The Marxist Dems, it seems fair to me to say, had the upper hand when it came to cheating and stealing. I frankly don't know that the Republicans were reported to be the bad guys in any such election cheating or stealing anywhere in the country. Now, that speaks better of their ethics than it does their energy and commitment, doesn't it? As for lying, though, that's a tight game between these two political parties. The edge certainly goes to the Marxist Dems, though, mainly because they've got the White House and Joe Biden. That's a real advantage. The Republicans did as well as they could without either the White House or the national corporate media on their side. They did try to keep up with that lying thing. Ronna McDaniel, RNC head, saying they were doing great on their ground game before the election. She was so emphatic that it made some folks feel like crying for what the Republicans were about to do to those poor Marxist Dems. Turns out, no sympathy required, at least not for the Dems. Save it, though, for the losers, the GOP. They're still a bunch of losers. They've got McDaniel and the other Max, Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy. McDaniel, McConnell, and McCarthy. Now that's the three McRhinos, right? What a bunch. McConnell financing Dems, opposing Republican candidates, McCarthy raising $500 million, and thinking for sure, Bigora, the little people will never consider why the big money sprinkled the green over his rhino head. Ah, no, lads and ladies, the three McRhinos have done it again. And they now say that if we don't anoint McCarthy as speaker, the radical Dems will have their say. As if there's any daylight between a rhino and a full-on Marxist menace like Schumer, Pelosi, or Jeffries. Globalist elites they be all, and no differences at all with the likes of the McRhinos. Trying to make a difference is one of the Republican Party's leading conservatives, the former chairman of the Freedom Caucus, re-elected to Congress for a fourth term this year. Congressman Andy Biggs is our guest, a great American, and Congressman, great to have you back with us. Now, Paul Ryan, reviled by most conservatives and most decent Americans when he was speaker, is daily trying to find some kind of relevance or at least get his name in the paper. His latest effort? To say he supports Kevin McCarthy for speaker, saying McCarthy's been good for conservatives. What do you think, Congressman?
I'm not sure, you know, what to think about former Speaker Ryan endorsing Kevin, but it's not a surprise. I mean, look, McCarthy was his majority leader.
Right.
McCarthy's been the minority leader for 4 years, the majority leader for 2 years. He's been in leadership for, I think, 7 or 8 years. You know, he's been training for this his whole life. And I think Paul Ryan would view McCarthy as kind of an extension of Paul Ryan's speakership, perhaps. And
you mean he's going to block subpoenas? He is going to reach across the aisle to all of the Democrats and do what he's told? I mean, his speakership was a disgrace, in my opinion. What is your meaning?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, look, Kevin McCarthy already said that he didn't want to impeach anybody. He thought that was a political thing that just Democrats do. It'd be political showmanship. He's talked about reaching across the aisle. And doing that type of thing. And, you know, Luke, there are things that we probably agree on with the Democrats, but here's the deal. They view us as political enemies. They attack us with every tool that they can possibly think of. They want to give us now Hakeem Jeffries, who is really radical left. And I've worked with Hakeem on a bill called the Jack Bill to go after crooked lobbyists. But, you know, the bottom line is, they view us as political enemies, and if you want the status quo pre-Trump, then I would say that maybe McCarthy would be the one that people would want, and that's why I say maybe it's an extension of the Paul Ryan years. Maybe that's what Paul Ryan felt like, he's gotten a bad rap from conservatives.
Yeah, well, if you can do a psychoanalysis of that man, I don't know what to say. It's just he is just absolutely awful. He was anti-Trump with the president of the United States and his own party. This should be the kiss of death for Kevin McCarthy's ambitions to be Speaker of the House, to be endorsed by the likes of Paul Ryan, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I do think so, but that's for people who live outside the DC bubble. For people in the DC bubble, maybe that's a good thing, I guess. I don't know, but like Lou, the people you said just a second ago, the people want change. And if you just keep putting the same people in, you're not going to get that change, the structural change necessary to restore American greatness. And so when I was going out campaigning for myself and for others in my district and around Arizona and across the country, I can tell you the question I got more often than any other was, are you going to give us the same leadership? Are we going to have McConnell and McCarthy? Is that what the Republicans are going to do? And I just don't think that's what they want. I think the American people want a change.
Well,
And
I'll go farther. I will tell you that the American people don't want McCarthy. They don't want McConnell. And one of the reasons that there was a, to me, there wasn't the red tide that was expected. Part of the reason was people didn't know what to think of you guys. You didn't put
yeah.
together a contract with America. You didn't tell anybody what, and I'm saying you, I'm talking about the conference, the Republicans and the Democrats, the Republicans in the House and the Republicans in the Senate, just simply didn't tell anybody. Tried to dance through it like, well, we won't make any waves and maybe we'll get a wave. I mean, it was a bizarre moment and in my estimation, frankly, a terrible leadership from McConnell and McCarthy. Your
Yeah.
thoughts?
Yeah, Lou, I'm with you on that. That's so about a year ago, I put out something called My America First Plan. It's been on my website. I've talked about it, but I felt we needed to have a positive affirmative action plan, not just say we're not the Democrats and we'll go around the off the cliff at a slower pace. Mine was to say, look, we're gonna attack inflation, energy, we're gonna attack the border, crime, the woke policies, the feckless foreign policy of this administration. And then I gave a list of at that time of a legislation that would go to that. I also said, look, here's the oversight. These are the committee hearings we need to have, everything from Fauci and COVID and gain of function to now Hunter Biden and what's going on there to the weaponization of DOJ and the FBI. And then I also went through, Luke, because I thought this was important, is to tell the American people, yeah, we won't have the White House, but here is how you get stuff done. You leverage the money bills, you leverage the NDAA and other must-pass legislation. You hold the oversight hearings, and then where you need to, you apply what I call constitutional discipline, and that's impeachment of people like Alejandro Mayorkas. So I think you're right. I think people didn't trust Republicans to actually get in and make the changes we need. Now we got more votes nationwide, but we didn't get them. We didn't get the wave that we thought we were going to get. And I think it's because what you said so well, and I'll give you one other thing too, but that we didn't articulate our position of what we were going to do, and we didn't have the trust. We have to have the trust. And then the second thing is, the you had that group, that PAC, that super PAC that Kevin McCarthy raises money for, and they were putting money against people like a great conservative like Ana Paulina Luna out of Florida. She got outspent like 12 to 1, and they were playing in primaries, and they took out tried to take out the Levitt the young lady Levitt out of New Hampshire. They withdrew money from her. You
Right.
had Majewski in Ohio. You had people Sabatini in Florida. You had people that were good conservatives, and all of a sudden, this money's pouring in against them from the CLF, which was that super PAC that Mr. McCarthy raises money for, and so that hurt as well.
The CLF, tell everybody what that means.
That's the Congressional Leadership Fund, and that's so that's different. That is Kevin McCarthy raises a bucket load. I mean, maybe even as much as $200 million for the CLF. And what they do, that group is kind of run by a guy named Jeff Miller's big on that. Doesn't like conservatives. Doesn't like me. Doesn't like you, Lou, by the way.
By the way, you give him a big hug for me, will you? I like everybody.
Me too. I'm a lover, not a fighter. Well, I'm a fighter too, but I love everybody. I'm just going to fight for the rights of people, right? So anyway, they put money into campaigns and Kevin cannot coordinate, but he can make recommendations. And they put money out there.
Yeah. So when I ask you about that, it's the same deal. The Senate leadership committee is the big bucks wild pack for the gives McConnell all of his power, and without that power in both the Senate and the Congress, the leaders are significantly constrained, is the way I would put it. And if you go back to Citizens United and look what we've done, I mean, we've made them, we had them armed and dangerous already, the leadership in both the Senate and the House of both parties. But when Citizens United made it nuclear, and we've got to take a look at that, because it's just not the way to do business in America. This has become a corporocracy, if you will, as a result, don't you think?
Yeah, it really, really has. And then you add to the funding, Lou, you add the rules changes over last 30, 40 years where speakers have basically centralized power into the leadership, so that these major bills, it's going to be negotiated between the top R and D in the Senate and the top R and D in the House. They're going to get together. They're going to work this out. And then they don't let us do, they don't let you have amendments. They're going to give this bill to you that has maybe 15, 20 pieces of legislation in it, plus a whole bunch of other extraneous garbage. And they're going to give it to you and say, we're going to do this in 4 hours. And they don't give you time to read it, that you can't amend it. And Paul Ryan had the most bills in history where you could not amend them, the most what we call closed rules. So you couldn't.
Basically, his speakership was run out of K Street by the Chamber of Commerce, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what people tell me. I was so new, Lou. I was so busy just trying to do good legislation and wondering why my bill, Lou. I had a bill that would have funded paying for the wall on the border wall through a small tax on all of the transfer payments that people send out of this country that just leave our economy because they're getting paid under the table. They would have paid for that wall many times over. Paul assigned it to 7 committees. And so I was fighting on all of that front and trying to protect President Trump from the false allegations against him. And in reality, what was happening is the power center was preventing significant actions from being happened. Everything from the Obamacare repeal, that's all of that.
Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell were the president's biggest enemies on Capitol Hill. I'll give the president credit. I can't imagine, as he did several times, actually sitting down and grinning across the table from those guys, because my temptation would have been to slap him right upside the head. I mean, metaphorically. I don't mean physically.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, he put up with them way too long and didn't get enough support at all from the Republican Party in any fashion as president, and what he accomplished is amazing. But I want to get us back to this, and that is the leadership and what's going to happen here. What are you going to do, and how much support do you have, and what's it going to take for you to prevail?
Well, I got in the vote we took last week, I got 31 people voted for me. Another 5 people didn't vote for me, but they voted against Kevin, and Kevin had 188. But I cannot tell you how many people came up to me, and I'm talking to people daily now, And they're starting to realize Kevin will not be the Speaker of the House, because look, I saw a projection this morning that we're going to have a 3-seat majority at the most. And the projection I saw was that we'll have a 1-seat majority. And if that's the case, any person can prevent you from being the Speaker of the House, because you got to get to 218, and any Republican can do that. So people are starting to realize that. And I'm an alternative, and I hope that people would realize that I was the president of the Arizona Senate for 4 years. I know what it's like to have a fairly thin margin. It was never that thin, but I do know how to work with people within the wide spectrum of the Republican Party to get legislation through. But I also have the courage to stand up to the Biden administration. So I think what you're going to see, Lou, is over the next month or so, you're going to see people saying, well, I can't get to McCarthy, and McCarthy's not going to get there. And that a lot maybe say, well, I support Biggs or I don't support Biggs, but somebody else may emerge. So that on January 3rd, but if the American people sit quietly by, it'll be, we don't know. I don't know who would be it if we sit quietly by. We have to be out there talking.
Well, if, you know, by the way, the American people got nothing to do with this, Andy, and you know that. This is all about the members of your conference and the U.S. Congress. And it may be that we're looking at a moment in time, a historic moment, in which we will actually see Republicans rise up and say they're not going to just have a daisy chain that runs from John Boehner to Paul Ryan to Kevin McCarthy. Because in that direction lies disaster. We've seen it time and time again. Because in 2024, the President of the United States will be Donald J. Trump. And we've got a bunch of rhinos right in the center of the Republican conference in the House. I don't know what the number is, 40, 50 conservatives in the Freedom Caucus and conservatives that are on the periphery of it. This is a time for the conference to actually come together and draft somebody that they think would be the right leader. Everyone from moderates to the Freedom Caucus. Everybody. Why can't that be done? Why can't there be an honest to God rising up on the part of the Republicans, and they draft the man or woman they want to be the Speaker of the House instead of sitting there being told like children how it's going to be, like you were talking about? Why doesn't somebody take it as a damn insult that the leader of the House would give them 4 hours to look at a 800-page bill and vote on it? The hell with that crap.
Yeah, Lou, that you're saying exactly what I've been telling people, and that is this is a historic moment. We can change the trajectory. We are in an existential crisis in this country. We're going to go one way or the other here, and if Republicans fail to make a dramatic stand in 2022 in who our speaker is and how we fight against the Biden administration and lay the foundation for 2024, then we aren't going to win 2024, Lou. That's how serious I think this thing is.
Oh, hell, I'm not worried about 2024 right now. I'm worried about the fact that we won 2022 and we don't know what the hell you guys are going to do. You guys won an election. I don't care what the margin is. Is it one? Is it two, three? I don't know. But we know that the Republic has survived small margins before, from the 1930 to back to 1916. Yeah. We saw it. So it'll all be okay. But it could be beautiful if there just was a fire in that conference to do the right thing, to no longer behave as rubber stamps for the conference leader, whether it's the speaker, whether it is the majority leader, whether it's the minority leader. And I'm talking about both parties. I don't care who it is. But watching the Dems just act like lemmings whenever Schumer snaps his fingers, I mean, it's preposterous.
Well, that's why I stepped up, Lou. That's why I stepped up, because somebody's got to try and light that fire. And that's what I'm trying to do right now. And I'm trying to light the fire And, you know, I hate to say it, I love these guys, but sometimes I look at it as I'm trying to light the fire, the wood's wet, the wood's wet. And I'm trying to, first I got to blow on that wood to dry it off, and then we got to light the wood. And that's the hope that I have. And I'm going to keep fighting it because, Lou, we cannot elect somebody who's going to do the same thing that has brought us to this point and is afraid to use every tool in the toolbox. You know, when we started doing the Freedom Caucus, started leading this thing on vote and just process, just saying we're going to vote on every bill. You know who gave me the hardest time? It was Republicans. It was not Democrats. Republicans said it's inconvenient. You're wasting our time. Everybody's going to vote for this bill anyway. And my first step was to them was to say, look, here's the deal. If we don't use every tool, then we will get beaten every time. And if we can slow this down, keep them so busy that they're focused on their 30 suspension bills, and we require a vote on every one of them, then maybe we have a chance on the back end to stop 10 or 15 of their bills because they simply don't have time to process them and get them through. How about that? And they just, that's too logical. That's too strategic, yeah. I guess.
And you made me laugh with your wet wood metaphor, because I got thinking the choices in that conference are going to be wet wood, dry wood, and dead wood.
Dead wood burns, Lou.
In your metaphor, dead wood would be a combustible agent for you.
Yes.
We got a few of those so that you can dry it some of that wet wood. I want to go to, if I may, the idea that these expulsions of Intel Democrats, Ilhan Omar, it's just AOC's not going to be on committee. I'm thinking, you talk about low hanging fruit. Now that was it for McCarthy. He doesn't want them on committees. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, you got to get Swalwell and Schiff off the Intelligence Committee because they see things that the rest of us don't even see. And then Schiff's a leak a minute. So, yeah. And then Omar, she's easy to boot off foreign affairs because she hates Israel, one of our allies. And so that's a problem. But as you say, this is the point I've been trying to make to my colleagues. Performance art. Everybody was going to do that. Everybody who became speaker was going to say, look, that she's not going to be on foreign affairs. Those two guys are going to be off Intel. Let's see who you would rather have for Intel and make sure that we have an honest Intel committee. The problem is that's weak sauce. It's something that has to happen. And anybody was going to do it. That was going to be the speaker.
Well, so let me ask you this then. What are you going to do that's going to light a fire under all that wet wood in the Republican conference?
First of all, I'm advocating to change the rules so all the wet wood can actually participate. So you decentralize power. So, for instance, you got to stop the inflationary pressures. The way you do that is you do a budget. How about doing a budget for a change out of 20 years? No budget for 20 years, no budget in the 6 years I've been in Congress. So you get the budget process back to work, and you do a 7-year balanced budget program. That would be deflation, and not deflationary, but it would reduce the inflationary pressure. You start putting into mind that we're going to balance the budget, and then you allow every member to participate, both Republican and Democrat, to participate in the amendment process on the floor. So you decentralize power and give power to them. How about on committee assignments? How about you expand the steering committee? Right now, the steering committee, it doesn't matter whether they expand it or not. It's the arm of leadership. And how do I know that? Because Kevin realizes he's not going to be speaker. So what he's telling people is, what committee do you want to be on? Well, if the steering committee was as pristine as he says it is, he couldn't make those promises. So you open it up, you get people on the committees based on talent, capacity, interest. not based on how much money that they pay to the NRCC. NRCC is important for sure, but you don't base your committee assignments on a pay-for-play scheme, which is what that is. So what I'm talking about is decentralizing power away from the speaker and allowing people to participate in a way that's meaningful, where they can represent their constituents.
Everybody listening to you right now is getting a very good tutorial on the Constitutional Republic and its legislative branch. This is, I mean, it's awful. When I think about what you're saying, it's just awful that we have a situation where a United States congressman or a U.S. senator doesn't have to go to a committee hearing, doesn't have to really be boned up on appropriations, doesn't have to do the heavy lifting, because they know this is just going to be swept through, rubber stamped, and it's going to go down to a party line vote. So what the hell? And as a result, you get people like Swalwell. You get the people like Schiff. There's no hard work going on there. They're playing politics full time and public policy hardly at all. So, I mean, we're lucky to have survived these past 20 years, frankly, because the way this government has gone, the Congress and the House, I'm going to say this out loud, it's disgraceful of what it has become. And it isn't no longer the people's house and doing the people's work. It's doing whatever K Street says, whatever the Chamber of Commerce says, the biggest lobby in Washington, D.C., lobbying the federal government. It's outrageous, and nobody seems to give a darn.
Lou, I'll just tell you that my colleagues, they're baffled, some of them, why we have like a 10%, a 15%, whatever it is, approval rating. And I can tell you why we have a 10 or 15% approval rating. We don't respond to the American public and our constitutional duties. We should be trying to shrink the size of the federal government. How about going after people, like instead of putting 87,000 IRS agents into it, first getting rid of those 87,000 IRS agents, and then going after people like this bogus special prosecutor coming in to investigate Donald Trump, which use the Holman Rule, reinstitute the Holman Rule, which allows us to defund a bureaucrat or a small agency, boom, like that. Well, we don't do that. And that's why I'm like, we need a leader to do that. And if we're not going to do that, then we will always be viewed with disapprobation. We'll be the most mistrusted institution in America. When we used to be a trusted institution, we should reduce the size of the federal government, devolve the powers back to the states where they're meant to be. And as we do that, we'll shrink the bureaucracy, we'll shrink the tax burden on people, we'll stimulate the economy, and we'll be a freer people again.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that happened here, we've seen the House moderates now decide they're going to create a caucus that's filled, I guess you could call it the Rhino Caucus, because they mean to be so so tolerant that they're probably reaching across the aisle unilaterally as a caucus. What do you make of it? They want to be a counterweight, they say, to the Freedom Caucus.
Well, they've been there, the Tuesday group, the problem solvers, those have always been there.
The Main Street group.
Yeah, Main Street group, those, whatever they call themselves. But here's the thing, Lou, I do know this because I talked to them. I've worked with some of them on legislation. We can bridge the gap to get things that would be done. They want a fence built. They want to amend Title IX so that men can't go into women's locker rooms and play sports. They want to get to the bottom of gain of function and COVID and how that started. They want a budget that works for the American people. They don't want us to go bankrupt. There are ways to bridge the gaps, but having these without a leader that's actually talking to people on the ground about policy and empowering people to solve the problems, everything goes back to these the leadership again. I mean, they're making the decisions, and the rest of us are out there. You know, as you said it, we're out there without the power to do something. So they then try to distract you from doing good policymaking and doing good oversight. And so there's this constant bickering and contention instead of trying to find the few. I mean, because there are areas that would actually move the ball forward and return us to more constitutional republic form of government.
Well, you're,
that everybody agrees on.
Yeah, let me inject some reality here into this, to the fact that even if you achieve that, and I take your word for it, I believe you could do that, then you're up against the radical Marxist Dems. Almost yeah. To a person, the Democratic Caucus Conference, they are Marxist Dems. They are destructive. They hate America. They hate every institution that is worth a mention in Washington, D.C. They mean to destroy, and I mean, they've got some significant progress to report on the destruction of our judiciary, the corruption of the Department of Justice, the FBI, the federal bureaucracy itself. The executive is out of control. It's run. I mean, this is a puppet president. How do you do business with a group of people like that who are trying to destroy America? It's one of the, to me, that's, it's your thoughts.
Well, first of all, since we do have a majority, even though it's small, that's where you bring these, the moderate Republicans back and say, look, we agree on these 10 or 15 things. This will be our agenda, and it's going to be the fence. It's going to be Title IX. It's whatever, and it's balancing the budget, et cetera. That's, and you keep them from going to Democrats by allowing them to be empowered to solve the problems that we all agree as Republicans, even the rhinos agree on the many parts of the platform. Well, let's do that. And that would be, Lou, that'd be historic. In the last 20 years, that hasn't been done. But then you move it, then we have to deal with the Senate, which is as big a problem as you can imagine. Because we don't have the Senate, and you've got 10 to 15 Republicans that are going to vote with the Democrats on really bad stuff.
Yeah, let me remind everybody, the reason you don't have the Senate is because of a guy by the name of Mitch McConnell.
Yes.
He campaigned against Republican candidates.
Well, I mean, that's right. But what I used to tell Paul, I actually told him a couple times this, I said, I don't understand why you keep telling us we can't do something because the Senate can't do something. The House is the House. We can do the very best we can do, and that's what we should do. And if it's not as great as Andy Biggs thinks or even Lou Dobbs thinks, if we're moving the ball forward on conservative freedom, constitutional policy, we put it in the Senate, they have to make the bad decision. They either have to agree with us or they have to disagree. And at some point, the public will understand it is people like Mitch McConnell. So let's do our job for a change. Let's do the best job we can do. And that will put pressure on the other side of the Capitol, the Senate, to do a job. And they might push some of this stuff through. They may not push everything through, but we might get some of it through. But the point is, if we don't do that in the House, then we've just rolled over and we all become wet wood. That's the bottom line.
Well said, and I appreciate it. Congressman, we always give our guests the last word, and I'm going to turn to you for your concluding remarks. It's been an instructive, and I think we all learned something here today, and thanks to Congressman Andy Biggs. Congressman, the floor is yours.
Well, Lou, first of all, thank you for all you do. Appreciate your steadfastness. Also, I wish you happy holidays with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming. And then I'll just say for people who are listening, if you want to make a change, please reach out to your members of Congress. Tell them that they need to support me or someone other than McCarthy. We've got to make that change. And that will help lay the foundation for hopefully a new trajectory for this country back to a constitutional republic. But thanks for all you do, Lou. Thanks for letting me be with you today.
Congressman Andy Biggs, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much, and God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you too, Lou. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for being with us here on The Great America Show. Tomorrow, here with us, our guest, John Solomon, taking up the news of the day and much of the politics. That's John Solomon, here tomorrow. Please join us. Till then, God bless you, and may God bless America.